Hey, everybody, an extensive conversation as we talk about what is going on with the Democrat Party. We dive deep into the data, and we won, everybody. Just amazing. And Hispanics are defecting from the Democrat Party. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Become a member today, members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. Okay, we now have a great guest, Josh Hammer. Josh is a great man and really astute. And Josh, welcome to the program. Josh, I want your analysis of what happened here in the 2024 election. What made it different from elections past? What did we do right? And what did the Democrats do wrong?
Well, Charlie, first of all, huge kudos to you and to Turning Point and the whole operation over there. I mean, I think it's a very legitimate question as to whether or not we could have gotten the Trump van ticket across the finish line were it not for this massive get out of the vote effort, this massive willingness to get involved in the early vote, the mail-in voting. I mean, look, you know, we didn't choose to wage elections on this particular terrain. In my estimation, I would prefer call it a law, constitutional amendment, whatever you have to do, make it one election day, no early voting. If you live overseas, active military, whatever. But in general, not my preferred paradigm. The point is, in the aftermath of all the chaos from 2020, we had to play by their rules, whether we wanted to or not. So huge credit to you guys and basically everyone else out there as well, the RNC, everyone involved. I mean, this is a tremendous willingness to not play the ideal hand, but to play the hand that we were dealt. And we have all seen the results this week. So look, Charlie, I'm not shocked. I'm not shocked that Donald Trump dominated this much. In fact, my public prediction was actually that he would win all seven of the major battleground swing states. I am a little surprised at the extent to which the dominance extended. I mean, there's so many data points to possibly look at here. I mean, Starr County, Texas, the most Hispanic county in America, 97% Hispanic county, largely Mexican. Donald Trump winning that county by 16 points. Are you kidding me? You know, major urban corridors, Queens County, New York. I mean, like Queens. I mean, like the New York Mets, LaGuardia Airport, Queens shifting 20 to 22 points towards Trump from 2020. Donald Trump outright winning Miami-Dade County right here in Florida, where I live, a 70% Hispanic county, the most populous county in Florida. I mean, winning the national popular vote, the first time a Republican has done that since George W. Bush 2004, and likely going to end up winning so by an even larger margin than Bush did in 2004. I mean, this is historic stuff. 46% of the national Hispanic vote there. Basically, every element of this multi-ethnic working class coalition that conservative talkers and pundits and thinkers have talked about for years, it basically all came together. I mean, this was the culmination of the political realignment, basically. And I think you have seen the death, the long overdue death of the 2008 Barack Obama intersectional coalition. We have witnessed this week the death of Obamaism. Now, it was a long time coming. You saw a lot of these seeds back in 2020, possibly even a little bit before then. But all the pieces are finally coming together. And I think for the Democrats, Charlie, the Democrats really, really, if they're going to be intellectually honest, which they typically aren't, They need to really spend some serious time looking in the mirror and just pausing and engaging in some very sober introspection as to how their policies and their political ideology got so utterly divorced from the common sense mainstream sentiments of the American people. I mean, I saw some polling internally that apparently that transgender ad that the Trump campaign ran,
right,
where he had Kamala on, it was apparently a 2.7 percentage point shift from one ad. I mean, that's incredible. And that right there just encapsulates how out of touch they are.
Well, let me say a couple things on that ad. Number one, this is why I think Susie Wiles should be chief of staff, and I've said this now publicly. Susie Wiles went with her gut here. And some of the consultants, this is a true story, Blake, these super smart, hocus pocus consultants said, I don't know, running on the trans thing, just focus on economy. And Susie and the team said, this is bigger. They said, number one, we're trying to frame her as she is a radical liberal. The trans thing, for people in the middle, in the Midwest, it's not popular, but it involved illegal immigrants. So it's narrative immigration, and that immigrants get special treatment to such the extent that your taxpayer dollars chop off their private parts, Blake.
It perfectly ropes in so many things.
Can we get the ad, please, Ryan? Yep.
I talked to someone who, they were making fun of Trump's debate performance because they were in a lib circle that made fun of him saying the, illegal immigrants in prison, all of that. And then I pointed out, this is real, right? And I produced a link to it. And he's like, okay, well, it's not that big of a deal. How often is this happening? But it's not how often it happens. It's, it's like if you learned that Kamala, ate babies or something in private. It's not that it was a lot of babies. One is enough.
Yep.
And so to do something that demented, like import someone illegally into America so you can do novel medical practices on them while they're in prison. It's so demented. It's so deranged. We talked about this before the election. One of our biggest problems was the left was so insane that voters would not believe it. Yes. And it looks like this got through. Oh, they're really nuts, aren't they?
Yeah, and it was, and then what they did, the Trump campaign's so smart, they doubled up with the ad with Charlemagne the God's reaction.
Yeah.
So they did the ad, and then Charlemagne, whatever, the guy from Breakfast Club, and then they doubled up with his reaction, showing that not only is this crazy, but regular everyday people think it's out of control, it's nuts. And Josh, doesn't that go to show that this Trump campaign, I want to be clear, there was zero consultant data that showed this was a good idea, except a gut instinct from Trump's inner circle. Pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. I mean, it's kind of just common sense, though, isn't it? I mean, the transgender issue is an issue that polling has been 75-25, maybe 70-30, depending on the poll, the way you want to phrase it. I mean, the notion that U.S. taxpayer dollars should go to anyone to basically try to cut off your genitalia, chemical castration for inmates, for minors, for anyone, it is a ludicrous proposition. But, people internally at the Kamala Harris campaign, I think this is the key point, people internally, They heard the warning flags. Apparently, Bill Clinton told the Kamala Harris campaign, said, you guys have to answer for this. And the Kamala Harris people were like, what are you talking about? This makes no difference. Because they live in a bubble. Because they live in an echo chambers. I mean, they're listening to all the blue-checked lefties, Vox, Jezebel, all these stupid left-wing sites and these consultancies, Act Blue. I mean, they just talk among themselves, and they literally still think that you are just a racist, sexist, bigot, homophobe, transphobe, xenophobe, whatever, for not indulging the fantasy, as Blake just said, of a double or triple intersectional unicorn fart issue of bringing in a bunch of illegals and then taxpayers subsidizing, chopping off their healthy price. It's just a mess. It is a total mess. So common sense, visceral good instincts there. Look, it's just a remarkable success story, Charlie. And obviously a lot of other issues are relevant in this election as well. That's not the only one there. But it encapsulates everything.
All right, let's play cut 297. This is they spent, I think, $60 million on this ad. So smart. Play cut 297.
Kamala supports taxpayer-funded sex changes for prisoners.
Surgery.
For prisoners,
every transgender inmate in the prison system would have access.
Hell no, I don't want my taxpayer dollars going to that.
Kamala supports transgender sex changes in jail with our money.
Kamala even supports letting biological men compete against our girls in their sports. Kamala is for they, them. President Trump is for you.
I'm Donald J. Trump, and I approve this message.
So that was the second one. That was the sequel, Blake.
Yeah, I really love the they-them thing. I think that's an underrated part of it. It's not just that evokes the transgender issue.
It's so smart.
It also evokes, if you're a white-collar worker, you've had to sit through people putting their pronouns at the bottom of emails,
yes,
asking you for that stuff.
I totally agree.
You think of the language policing. If you're a college student, you've run into that language policing everywhere. And so it's bringing in so many things. It's bringing in, you're scared for your kids. It's bringing in, you're scared about the border. It's bringing in, the left are these obnoxious, moralizing scolds. And it all comes together in, one 30-second ad.
Josh, plug your stuff, please, really quick. 20 seconds.
Yeah, Charlie, always great to join you. So I'm on X, Josh underscore Hammer. Instagram is Josh B. Hammer. I host America on Trial with Josh Hammer and also the Josh Hammer Show. Charlie, once again, congratulations to you and Turning Point for your huge role in this. This is a tremendous success. Just a great, great week for these United States.
Well, look, you know who deserves the congratulations? The country does. We just played a small role. We did our job despite a lot of people trying to take us out, a lot of Republican operatives cheering us for our demise. And we kept our head down while everyone else was too busy on Twitter. We were putting ballots in boxes. This year, I've given you so many reasons to try Balance of Nature, but I've got one you cannot ignore. Let's review some of the other reasons first with Balance of Nature. You get a whole product made from whole fruit and veggie ingredients. Second, they can provide you with so many of the things you may be missing. Third, it could be just what you've been looking for to make you feel better. And of course, I take them. But I think you'll agree this reason trumps them all during November. With my special promo code, you'll get their Black Friday savings all month long. Use promo code CHARLIE and sign up as a new customer to get 50% off, free shipping, plus a free fiber and spice supplement. This is an unbelievable discount, but use my promo code CHARLIE. Call them at 800-246-8751 and use discount code CHARLIE or order online at balanceofnature.com. Use promo code CHARLIE and sign up as a new customer to get 50% off, free shipping, plus a free fiber and spice supplement. Use discount code CHARLIE to get 50% off, plus a free fiber and spice supplement. No, Donald Trump is like gaining steam in Arizona right now. It's incredible.
We were just talking about this before we get it on, is I think without our efforts, it would have looked a lot more like Pennsylvania or Wisconsin for Trump. We would
in
have
Arizona?
I don't even know.
A point. Who knows? Maybe.
It'd be within a point.
Maybe.
And with ours, with the data that we're coming back, I'm so excited to see the final data, Charlie, because I think we're going to be like at 210, 220 of our universe.
That's unbelievable.
And it's really unbelievable.
So in Arizona, everybody, national update, we still have 30% of all of our votes outstanding. Let's put 298 up. There's still 584,000 votes left in Maricopa, 175,000 votes left in Pima, 27,000 votes left in Cochise, 62,000 votes left in Yavapai, 20,000 votes left in Mojave. What is going on here, Tyler?
Let's throw it up. Oh, you got it up on the screen. Yeah. So Maricopa County has an estimated 584. There's some suggestions that it's up. It's closer to 700,000. Doesn't make sense. Not really right. So just for everybody's awareness here, Apache is the bad place, so you're basically losing 75% of those 13,000.
And that's where Navajo Nation is.
That's Navajo Nation, and we have a historic amount of...
Hilariously, Navajo Nation's in Apache County, not Navajo County.
Yeah, exactly. Navajo Nation goes through Navajo County.
But it's largely people in Apache. Yeah.
That's right. So they call that Nav-Apache, the combination of the two is Navajo-Apache. But you have the Apache tribe that's there. That's why it's called Apache. So the Apache tribe is like in the dead center of Navajo Nation. And they're a really unique tribe because they're protected, surrounded by the Navajo. You've got Gila, which is deep red, 5,500 votes. The vast majority, 75% of those are going to go to Trump and Kerry. You have Graham County, also that's similar to Gila. That's the home of Eastern Arizona College. It's a historically rural Mormon outpost.
What's the name of it? What is it?
Graham County.
Eastern Arizona
College.
I'm going to visit there at some point.
It's like one of the most conservative colleges in Arizona. Wow, we actually had a really good rally there and voter registration.
It's publicly funded, right?
It is publicly funded. It's basically like a community college for Graham County. It's the Graham County Community College.
That's awesome.
Highly Mormon. It's like basically like a tiny little Brigham Young University. Tons of people go there.
I will go visit there one time.
Wilcox area, that's there.
That whole part of the state I've never been in, you know that, right?
Well, it's hard to get to because there's mountains that are right there outside of Pinal, and so you have to go down and around to get to it. So either you have to intentionally get
and
to
they
Graham
have Mount Graham, right?
I think that's in Graham County, yeah.
Okay.
It's anyway. Right there on the border. And then you have Pima County, which is going to be really bad for us. But right now, the last drops have broken 50-50, which is really good for us. So that's a bad county. If Kerry can maintain getting 50-50 there, and then the rest of the state is basically it's basically red now, and Coconino is going to be not good either. So Coconino, Apache,
and Pima
are your red alert places where we got to see what comes in. Not very many votes left in Coconino or Apache. Maricopa County is, look, if you can break Maricopa County basically in half, 50-50, if you can keep Pima County to 50-50, the rest of the state's going to get you
Will Scholl do better than 50-50 with what's remaining in Maricopa?
You think so? So if she does, Charlie, you've got a Senator Lake.
Well, hold on. Let's do the math here. I want to do. You keep going. I'm gonna fact check you. You keep going.
Yeah, I mean, hear what I'm saying. So this is my prediction. If we go through all the counties real quick, we'll start in Mojave and work our way down to the bottom right. Mojave, we're gonna win 75% of those votes left. Coconino, we're gonna lose 70% of those votes. Navajo, we're gonna win 60% of those votes. Apache, we're gonna lose 75% of those votes. Yavapai, we're gonna win 70% of those votes. Gila County, we're gonna win 65% of those votes. Graham County.
How many total votes are outstanding right now?
The total is about a million, a little over a million.
Okay, yeah. So I mean, okay, I'm just doing the math here.
I'm looking at that college you mentioned, by the way, and in 2020 at least, it went for Trump 78%.
How cool is that?
it is a great. Great call.
Thatcher, Arizona.
It's a very Thatcher and Wilcox are little Mormon outposts. You have Pinal County, which is great. We still have 23,000 ballots left, 24,000 ballots left in Pinal. Those are going to go 70% for Kerry. Yuma, you're going to have at least 60% go for Kerry. Santa Cruz and Pima, which is basically the Pima Santa Cruz conjunction here, that's going to be a real big question mark. So, what happens in Pima?
Yeah,
what
I know.
How happens in Maricopa and how that offsets one another is going to be
it's really interesting. There's 217,000 good ballots, real ballots left. There's 199,000 Pima, Apache, Coconino ballots.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the rurals will outperform the bad counties?
Yeah, offset? Right now they are. Yeah, right now they are by about 10 points.
Okay, so you think the rurals will, you'll be getting net 10 points out of those remaining ballots?
If we net 5 points and Maricopa breaks even, you have a Senator Lake.
Yeah, well, if you net 10% of it, that's not totally right. It's close. I'll show you the math in a second.
It's very close.
All right, I've been a little bit of a skeptic here for Tyler on the Kerry Lake comeback tour, and I just did the numbers, and it's going to be way closer. Okay, I have my math. Blake, I want you to fact check it. Let's go to you have the outstanding ballots uncounted? You have
that. We're looking at the outstanding.
You don't have to
ballots.
Do this live on air. While I talk to Matt, you do this. Here's the assumption: Maricopa breaks even though she's winning it slightly. So mm-hmm. let's just go worst case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Coconino, Pima, and Apache perform as they currently are.
Okay.
Okay. And that the rurals will perform 70% for Kerry, which is actually lower than how they're performing.
Okay. We'll run those.
That's
numbers.
That's a fair number.
And she is 53,000 votes down. Mm-hmm. So do all of that. And tell me what the number is.
Well, we have to set this up because I'm leaving and I'm going to come back.
But I got to get to our guests.
The setup was that I said that all she has to do is break Maricopa. You said there's no way. And this is the point of this formula.
Because usually the rurals are in quicker.
The point of this formula is that it's true.
All right. So we have Matt Towery. Is that right, Andrew? Okay. Hey, Matt, welcome to the program. We shared a Fox News screen last night, and thank you for those kind words. Matt, credit to you. You're polling has become the gold standard. You saw this race correctly. Congratulations and welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Charlie. I'm on the fly today. I hope you can hear me well. I really wanted to join you. It's a pleasure. And by the way, I just want to again say what I told Laura's listeners and viewers last night, and that is you did a fantastic job. And everyone knows that a lot of folks say they're going to get turnout going and they're going to do this and that, but you delivered. And that was a big part of that victory. So congratulations.
Thank you. That means a lot, Matt. And a lot of people doubted us, but we worked hard. Thank you. Matt, from a polling standpoint, what are the top line takeaways? And someone who does this professionally, what surprised you the most this election?
Well, it really wasn't a surprise. It was an execution. You know, the Trump campaign said they were going to go after low propensity voters. In other words, people who are registered or may not be registered, but who don't vote, but could vote and would vote for Trump. And with your help and other groups, they did it. And I guess the second thing that was not a surprise to me because our polling showed it, but the African-American males broke, I think, more than the exit polls show. They show about 24% for Trump. I think it's probably even higher. And that kept these cities like Atlanta and Philadelphia and so many others from supplying a victory for Harris because she just was underperforming. And the turnout was light as well. The African-American community just was not excited by her. I could go on and on. I think that in general, you were kind of talking about my polling. I mean, you know, we have great pollsters like my friend Robert Cahaley at Trafalgar, Emerson, Fox News does some good work. But as you know, the polling snobs like Nate Silver and 538 always treat the other pollsters as if they're the gold standard, even though we usually have the lowest error rate. So I was just thankful. Listen, I was thankful the way the race went, and I was thankful that we got it right for the most part.
Well, it's just incredible. And so what would you say for a Democrat trying to learn from this election? What was one of their operating assumptions that they got most wrong, that was their biggest miss? Were they tried to build a theory of the case. What were one of their assumptions that was incorrect?
Well, I think it was more strategic than anything else. They felt like if you built a campaign based on celebrity and people who are popular to the general public, that you could somehow transfer their popularity and turn it into votes and turnout. And it was a miserable failure. They had Barack Obama chide African-American men for considering voting for Trump. That backfired on them. They used every name they could to attend their rallies. They even ditched a rally to go do Saturday Night Live. None of that worked. It was all a complete backfire. And so there's Donald Trump staying with the people, getting people fired up, talking about the real issues. And I'll say one other thing. The other mistake they made is they treated, in law school, I remember there's this case of the man with the eggshell skull. And the question is, if the doctor operates on it, the skull is going to shatter. But if he doesn't, the person's going to die. I was famous in tort, my torts class in law school. Well, they treated her like she was the candidate with the eggshell skull. They would not put her out. They wouldn't let anyone ask tough questions. And as a result, she came across to the public as being not serious and not capable of leading on issues like Donald Trump. And I think those strategic errors are probably part of the reason why she lost.
So as the Trump campaign looks backwards and they see the states where they performed the best, for example, Nevada, how can Republicans turn Nevada into a red state? What are the lessons we learn from turning Nevada, Donald Trump winning it, which is, I believe, the first time Donald Trump has ever won Nevada?
First time.
And the first time, yep, a Republican since 2004.
Yep.
I think Bush won it, right? Am I correct, Matt?
I think he might have won it in 16, but I'm not sure. Don't hold me to that. I've got a lot of numbers floating in my head. And like you, Charlie, I've not had a whole lot of sleep. So
no
let's
problem.
Assume that he didn't.
Yeah, I just looked at
question.
It. He did not win Nevada in 2016. So that's okay.
All right.
I believe it was the first time since 2004. Let me just fact check that. Yeah, right. Bush won Nevada in 2004. So first time in 20 years. Don't worry, I'm on no sleep too.
Right.
What can we learn from the Nevada victory and extrapolate that to turn Nevada into a red state?
Well, the first thing was, of course, Trump performed much better with the Hispanic community,
yep,
than in the past. And that was showing up in our crosstabs. That was critical. And I think part of that was that the Democrats blatantly tried to go the other way when it came to just, in general, their religious beliefs and their family core values. And I think that was a big part of this shift. The other part had to do with the working person. You know, when Trump said, and I thought it was brilliant, we're not going to tax tips. Yeah, everyone, of course, she did the Me Too thing. What, three weeks later, said, oh, Me Too, I won't tax them either. But that was done. That was copyrighted, in essence, when he said it in the minds of the voters. And I think the combination is that we need to appeal to their core values, stop all this wackiness that's going on that they just see as crazy. But we also have to appeal to the working values of people in states like Nevada. And he did it. You know, that union there has tremendous strength. And in fact, when they vote, the union sort of tracks the guys and gals who work at the casinos, because, you know, that's a lot of the vote. They'll strong arm them. So I've been told, in my opinion, I put it that way, that they weren't affected because these people had decided that they knew that Trump was going to look after them and she wasn't. So I think appealing to working people and appealing to their values without making it overly, it's not about one religion or another. It's more about the values of the family and the values of hard work.
Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. Did you know that 80% of adults take supplements? To feel our best, right? Well, one thing your dog can't do without you is improve their diet or health to feel their best. That's why I believe Rough Greens could dramatically help your best friend by adding what's missing to their diet like you do. Rough Greens is helping thousands of dogs feel better and live longer, including my dog who loves it. I want what's best for him. Naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, who created Rough Greens, is also an airborne ranger and Green Beret, an amazing background. He loves dogs, and he's on a mission to help as many as he can. Dog food is dead food, and Rough Greens supplements your dog's food with essential vitamins and minerals, omega oils, digestive enzymes, probiotics, and antioxidants. Dr. Black is offering a free Jumpstart trial bag so your dog can try it. Get back their energy, improve elimination, and get rid of itching, scratching, achy joints, and bad breath. So fetch your free Jumpstart trial bag today and just cover shipping. Don't change your dog's food, and you don't have to. Just add Rough Greens. Go to ruffgreens.com/Kirk, ruffgreens.com/Kirk. And so Donald Trump sweeps all seven battleground states and in just historic and amazing fashion. We saw gains with younger voters, with black voters, as you mentioned, Hispanic voters, young families. Almost every single county across the country, despite a couple, have gone far to the right. And now we are looking at Arizona. Arizona, which of course we're headquartered, is the best performing of all the swing states, and it's only growing. Donald Trump is on pace to win Arizona by almost 7 to 8 points, where we are headquartered and put a lot of work into it. The margins are remarkable here, and the Democrats, you have to wonder if they really saw it coming. I want to talk about, just really quick, Matt, about a couple minutes remaining, the polling industry. How did the polling industry get it so wrong? It seems as if they're more ideological than analytical.
Well, there's another secret, Charlie, and I mentioned this on Laura's show last night. Firms like Insider Advantage, my firm, Trafalgar, we have a way of interviewing people where it's more anonymous. You don't have someone on the other end of the phone who is imposing their dialect or where they're from or their attitude that causes you not to want to tell someone how you're thinking. And so the way we do it, and they have a different way at Trafalgar, but it works as well. We gather this information and we're able to get the shy Trump voter, which is definitely an issue now, to respond to us. Now, let me just say this. All pollsters is a hard job. And I said last night on Laura's show, I play golf, not great, but 45-foot putt being made by a professional, the odds are about 4% he's going to make it. And we got to stay within that 4% margin of error or we get beaten up. So imagine getting up every day and having to make 45-foot putts and be within 4 inches. So it's a hard deal. But I think one of the things is these, quote, gold standard pollsters are using old methods, and all they get are primarily Democrats. They have to really weight up the Republicans, and the Republicans they get are not necessarily the ones who are voting, and they certainly won't tell them how they're going to vote. So they've got an inherent problem. It's not – it's in their weighting, but it's more in the way they collect their data in the first place.
It's just the polling industry is remarkably well-funded. And I mean, in the sense where people give it a lot of money and a lot of trust, and it's just
right.
it's really something else. In closing, Matt, final reflections here on this historic presidential cycle.
Well, my reflection is that this was one of the best run campaigns on the part of the Trump side that I have ever seen. I've been doing this since 1980. I know I sound like an old man now, working with Newt Gingrich and Mac Mattingly, my former boss in the U.S. Senate. When we got elected in 80 in that historic landslide for Reagan against Carter, I think it was much like that Reagan election. You're seeing senators brought into the table who weren't going to win. He had a coattail effect for once that was substantial. I just think, Charlie, it all came together. I mean, with groups like yours, and that was so critical, getting these young people to vote. And we see it in the exit polls. What a fantastic job you guys did. It just all came together. Sometimes in politics, it all comes together, and sometimes nothing comes together. So relish the moment, man. This is a great win.
Very good. Matt, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie. Nice to talk to you.
Blake, have you crunched some of the numbers?
I've crunched the numbers.
But I don't – I agree. I think I said 70-30 on the rules, not 75-25.
Okay, but even that – so it's like Pinal. We have a lot out of Pinal. Pinal is 56-42 right now.
Correct, but it is getting
better. I
don't
know the full shape of that. If it's getting better, that's great. But 75-25, 70-30 is –
So
more.
How much would your model say if we win the rules by 70-30,
then it'd be really close, and that's assuming
but
the Pinal ratio holds.
Let me ask
and
you.
And as we say, Apache all down, and Maricopa 50-50.
What if we win Maricopa 51-49?
That gives us a lot of give.
All right, I can actually call some of these races because I know it better than New York Times does. Some of the, I do not. The California stuff is so wacky. You think you're winning, right, Blake? And all of a sudden, like over two weeks.
There's a really funny one is that they'll have us, if you go to the New York Times, it'll say 209 Republicans. But one of them that's funny is they haven't called Washington District 4 because it's super duper close. It is a race between two Republicans.
Oh,
so okay. They haven't called the winner.
Got it. Okay, so let me just go. You guys, so right now, New York Times has it at 209. So watch this, okay? This is going to be great. So Washington is 210.
Yep.
Okay. Eli Crane will win. So that's 211. Begich will win in Alaska. That is 212. Schweikert will win. That's my guy. He's doing well. That's 213. Bacon will win. That is 215. Ciscomani will win. That is 216. And Marionette Miller Meeks will win. That's 217. And then we need one of the Californias to break. And
we've currently got, let me look at some of these. Scott Bout's super close. Young Kim is up by 17. She would have to lose the mail-in votes.
I can say confidently that we're going to pick up two or three from Orange County because they're incumbents as well. Yeah. So we're going to keep the House, but it will probably be a 3 or 4 seat majority.
Yeah, you would need to lose. You would need to lose the mail-in vote in District 40 by about 35-40 to drop that Young Kim race.
But they're also, where's Kent? Is Kent in that Washington 4?
Is Kent that... is Washington's third district. He's down 4 with 82% in.
No, but why was Cliff so bullish that that was going to go our way?
You know, I think... I can't remember the specific reasons he gave.
Right? I mean, he's like, oh, it's going
to
get...
I think a lot of our guys are trained, you know, to like... Hope springs eternal. Be aggressive. We always think.
Maybe. I don't know.
There's stuff.
Let me take a look at that race here.
Because I'm looking there. I can click on that one, too.
Yeah, the votes remaining are in Clark County, which is blue. But, yeah, I mean, they say that there's a ton of votes outstanding. I don't see that.
Because they have it even also just by, like, the counties or districts. And if you look at where the vote is in that one, it's 76% in is the lowest amount. And it's the area around Vancouver, which is the bluest part, whereas if you look at the parts that are red on the map, those are 90-95% in. I think it'll be pretty tough to pick up that district. I'm not the pro. I'm not the campaign pro. Yeah. I'm just going off what the New York Times website has.
So again, that goes to 210 with Washington, to 11 with Eli Crane, to 12 with Begich, to 13 with Schweikert, to 14 with Bacon, to 15 with Ciscomani, to 16 with Marionette Miller Meeks, and then you need two of the Californias to break.
I mean, if you just want to run through the list, I'm looking here. So we're at 209, 210, if you count that Washington one that is already there. Uh-huh. It's very weird. And then if you just look at the ones we're in the lead right now, you'd be 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. 21, and then you also have Bacon's district there.
Yeah, you're going to lose some of these California.
We're going to lose some of them. Some of them are really close. It's insanely close in Maine, too. I don't know if there's any prospect for that improving.
He's declared victory. That's toughie, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's too bad. Oregon District 5,
however,
we're
Maryland,
down.
Maryland 6 is within 384 votes.
That is amazing.
That's a really good one. He's a good candidate, too. So that one could flip. I think we're going to end up around like 221 seats, which is
about the same as last
time.
That's
a 3-seat majority. Yep.
Yeah. I want to take back Alaska. It's such nonsense that we lost that one.
No, we're winning it back. Yeah. That's Begich.
Yep. Up right? 4 right now. So.
Yeah, but again, they got to fly in votes from the rurals. So. Okay. I mean, look, by the way, we had low hopes for the House as it is,
yeah,
right?
It was so, they were giving us 80% odds of losing it going in.
So that's the Trump coattails. We have to figure out a long-term plan, Blake, of how we can win back old House margins. I think it's a fundraising problem. It's a candidate recruitment problem, right? It's just
a lot of the problem. It's very clear there's a lot of people who just go in and they're like, I'm only voting for Trump. And then they fill
it
out and put it in the box. And you have to be like, guys, Trump will be a better president when you give him a governing margin.
Yes, that's you live by the low prop, you die by the low prop, right? But Dave McCormick, to his credit, was able to get those across the finish line. It's a goofy race. Bob Casey says that he says that there's a path from the victory. What path is he talking about? It looks like they're out of votes. So I'd be super curious what Bob Casey is talking about. Maybe a provisional fight. But right now, Dave McCormick is up 31,000 votes in Pennsylvania, and I think every single county has fully reported in Pennsylvania. So that would be a pickup. That would get us the 53 Senate seats. And let's see what magic Kerry Lake can do in Arizona, because Sam Brown's not looking too great.
Sam Brown, just too much mail vote, arrives late. Much.
All right, email us, freedom@charliekirk.com. We also withstood a Democrat-funded nonsensical campaign in Nebraska. Deb Fisher ended up winning by 8 points, which is really, really good. Really happy about that. And, of course, Tim Sheehy, 8 point win. 8 point win against John Tester. Turns out the polling was right. Are you ready to lose weight but not sure where to start? I understand. I was right where you are 2 years ago. Let me tell you why I chose the PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition Program. First, Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. Her program is based on years of research and is science-based. Second, the PhD program starts in nutrition. There is so much more. They know that 90% of permanent change comes from the mind, and they work on eliminating the reason you gain this weight in the first place. There's no shortcuts, pills, or injections, just solid, science-based nutrition and behavior change. And finally, a probably most importantly, I lost 30 pounds. Look, they're amazing. If you want to lose weight, you got to go to myphdweightloss.com. I was just texting with Dr. Ashley Lucas today. If you're ready to lose weight for the last time, call 864-644-1900. Go online at myphdweightloss.com. Do what I did and what hundreds of my listeners have done and call today, 864-644-1900. I recommend their program. Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. Her program is based on years of research and is science-based. Second, the PhD program starts in nutrition, but it's so much more. Go to myphdweightloss.com, myphdweightloss.com. Call 864-644-1900. I lost over 30 pounds. Dr. Ashley Lucas, great American. Check it out, myphdweightloss.com. Andrew, today's been tough to get guests. You know what I've noticed, Andrew, is that in the right-wing ecosystem, the laws of nature have hit humanity today, where like all of a sudden everyone's like sleeping in and catching up. It's like you could do like 2 all-nighters, maybe 2.5, and then all of a sudden it just you're done, right, Andrew?
Well, I want to be clear. We could get guests if we wanted to. I mean,
no, I know. I'm just saying it's just not. There's just a lot of. Like, can we wait an hour? Like, you know.
No, I know. Charlie, you're pretty particular about the people that we have on.
I mean, we have a high quality product to produce here.
Exactly.
It's not a farmer's market here.
Exactly. So it's, you know, so that's one thing I will say. But yeah, 2, you know, our flow, if you look at our inbox, everybody's just loving the flow of the show lately in this election season. So there's been a little bit less of a priority put on it. But I will tell you, you know, Charlie, I think, you know, you were talking about the House race, and I was telling you that New York Times tracking right now has us up and or winning, already declared at 223 House seats, which would be definitely enough to govern, I would say, especially with President Trump leading.
Yeah.
And 53-54 in the Senate.
Well, this is a very important thing. So let me just, why would a 5-seat majority be easier when you have a incumbent president? These people will not mess around. It's Speaker Johnson didn't have the ability to tell him not what to do. An incumbent president who's on a second term, who's insanely popular in the country, won the popular vote, and in your party, he'll pick up the phone and say, listen, you're going to vote for this bill. You know, it's like done, okay? Does that make sense, Blake?
And it's even just things are so much better than they were in 2016. We've had, at this point, 8 years where the Republican Party has been remade. We've gotten rid of some old lawmakers who are behind the times. You have new people in office who, it's not even if they have to 100% agree with Trump. They at least understand why Trump has been successful and what his appeal is. We know it's not a fluke. We know it's not, oh, he only won because of Jill Stein voters. No, he won the popular vote outright. He's gotten way more popular in blue states, and it's just so much more natural to cobble together a coalition to get the things we want done. It's not going to be, oh, let's just pass a tax cut and then do nothing else.
Yeah. And so so there's 2 tracks here. There's legislative priorities. And then a lot of the stuff Trump can fix without Congress, by the way, remain in Mexico border, right? I mean, a lot of it, but what should the legislative priority be realistically? I mean, we got to get a budget done. We have to get budgeting done the right way. What do you think, real? Because the problem was last time is we got some corporate tax cuts. Great.
Yeah, I mean, I genuinely think that a lot of border stuff, actually, the time, if you're going to do it, it's going to be early. You're going to have Democrats looking at each other and going, we let the border get so bad that we shed like 20 points among Hispanics. The entire like just point and scream racism didn't work. So you wonder, like, are they really going to filibuster hard to say, oh, we can't build a wall on the border now, that we can't deport any illegals? I think you might see a lot more tentative openness to that, maybe among Fetterman types in the coalition who say, hey, we'll have a lot better shot of winning if we're not seen as putting foreigners above American citizens. And so I think a lot of stuff we can do on our own, but you do need congressional action for the most long-term successful stuff. I think we can get action on that.
I agree. And by the way, with us, the thing I'm most excited about is McCormick is going to hang on. I can say that confidently. It's going to be a knife fight. Would you agree, Blake? It's 30,000 provisional ballot. It doesn't matter. We don't know how many provisional ballots there are, but I think he's going to win. 53 Senate seats is very good, and if we can get a Kerry Lake. Now, mind you, if we could have gotten a little extra juice in Wisconsin, and we spent so much money on this Maryland fool's errand to lose by 7, okay? It's just ridiculous. Michigan, Rogers ended up losing by, 30,000 votes. Wisconsin,
unbelievable,
30,000 votes. It's almost like strangely consistent. Sam Brown down 13,000 votes now in Nevada. I don't think he can overcome that. Do you, Andrew? I just don't.
No, he's toast.
However, I will say, though, that you know Adam Laxalt should be a U.S. Senator from Nevada. That didn't happen. Nevada is going to be target for Chase in 2026 and 2028.
Nevada is so organically, I think, a state that we could win with the new Republican Party.
I totally agree. Now, the Senate maps for us next time, this is why we're so, you know, focused on this, are not great. The states in particular that we have at Georgia, well, that's not one we have. Actually, it's not as bad as I thought it was. Have you looked at the Senate maps? They're not that bad.
Oh, yeah, it's 2026.
We have to hold on to North Carolina. We will. We're going to probably lose Susan Collins in Maine.
If she retires.
Right.
She doesn't retire, she's super been able popular. To defy gravity multiple times.
But Georgia, we have a chance to flip there, but that's going to be tough. By the way, Andrew, can we comment that with all the money we spent and the organizing in Trump, we still only won Georgia by 2 points?
To me, that's an area of concern, to be honest.
I totally agree.
You had this big red wave, and yet we saw the areas surrounding Atlanta, and I think Blake's point is probably well made, that as Atlanta gets more crowded, you're seeing more spillover into surrounding suburban counties, so it's getting bluer and bluer as the Atlanta metro increases in size, which it's just going to make Georgia harder and harder to win. So we're talking with Josh McCoon, GOP chair in Georgia. We've got some plans on how to counter this. There is going to be an issue, though, with Atlanta just continuing to explode in size.
Well, Kemp might run.
What can we do to sort of shore up Georgia? Because I think Georgia is a state we just can't afford to lose. That in North Carolina, we have to do some important work in the next couple years to make sure that we can win those states, not just in 2026 and 2028, but well into the future. Because we have to look at that. Now, an interesting standpoint here is, you know, Charlie, we talk about this election being a big, you know, a transformation of the electorate. And I think there's some interesting clues here from New York, right? I mean, New York State had a big red shift. So, I mean, if current trends hold, you could see some nutty things looking into the future where some of these states like New Jersey come into play. I mean, we only lost New Jersey by 4 points. New Jersey's got some super Hispanic-heavy districts, and if those Hispanics keep coming our way post-Trump, so this is the big question for the, you know, as we're sort of crystal ball way down. We have Sam Rodriguez coming on in the second half of this hour to talk about what's going on with Hispanics. But if this trend with Hispanics holds in a post-Trump world, you could see the whole map just get bonkers.
Hold on, but
in a way,
but,
we
Blake,
didn't expect.
Like, fact check, why is this map so bad for us in 2026? I kind of took people at face value because they say 51 seats needed for majority. That's not right. It's 50 because we control the White House for 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's way more of our guys are up, so there's not a lot of pickup chances. Yeah, North Carolina, I would say you'd have to watch about North Carolina.
If Tom
Tillis
runs for re-election, he will win.
Iowa, they'll go after that one. In a bad year, all of those are vulnerable. Well, Chuck Grassley's not running again. He's 90.
So what?
He might.
He's the we'll iron see. Horse, man.
We will see.
But hold on. As we saw, Iowa is now a Republican plus like 16 presidential state.
Yes.
I'm trying to see, though. Georgia's a potential flip for us. Maine, we could lose if she retires.
So is Michigan.
No,
Georgia.
No, Michigan,
the
yeah.
The thing about Georgia that's interesting to me is it was so close there and in North Carolina because we speculated, will we get a big shift of black voters towards Trump? And that didn't actually materialize. It was like 1 or 2 points, but it wasn't a significant revision like we saw with Hispanics. If Trump can continue to push that, and like then we need that shift to make Georgia into a, oh, this is now a plus 8 state for us again. We don't need to sweat it as much. Mm-hmm. If we can pull that off, it's great. If we can't, it continues to be a problem.
Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. Americans are tired and frustrated by a stalling economy, inflation, endless wars, and the relentless assault on our values. Thankfully, there's companies like Patriot Mobile that still believe in America and our Constitution. I'm proud to partner with Patriot Mobile because they're on the front lines fighting for the First and Second Amendments, sanctity of life, and our military and first responder heroes. Take a stand for conservative causes and put America first by switching to Patriot Mobile today. You'll get the same nationwide coverage as the big providers because Patriot Mobile operates across all three major networks. Plus, they back their service with a coverage guarantee. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team will find the best plan for your needs. Go to patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call 972-PATRIOT. Right now, get a free month when you use offer code CHARLIE. Don't get fooled by other providers pretending to share your values or the same coverage. Go to patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call 972-PATRIOT for your free month of service today. That is patriotmobile.com/Charlie, patriotmobile.com/Charlie. Okay, everybody, let's play some tape, but I just want to say really quick, let's put 300 up on screen. Not that I want to get too ahead of ourselves, but I'm connecting 2024 to 2026 because I'm going to be honest, I'm not going to work as hard in 2026 as I did in 2024. It's just not humanly possible. No, by the way, I'm not that I like it's going to be fine. It's just a midterm. You can't do it every time, right? It's just you got to ramp up.
You can't spend 50% of your life going
no.
full steam.
And by the way, it's like, okay, I'm going to go to Susan, you know, help Susan Collins and me. Okay, I might do an event or something, right? But the Democrats are going to be the opposite. They're going to go crazy in the midterms, right? When we're going to still kind of be recovering. And that's the way it works, right? It goes in cycles. It goes up. It goes down. So, Andrew, I think you're going to love this. I think we try to play offense. We run Brian Kemp and Glenn Youngkin in Virginia and Georgia in the midterms.
I love that.
Right? Play offense.
I love that.
Glenn Youngkin could totally be a U.S. senator, and he's very popular, and that would be a pickup in Virginia because he's termed out.
You got to remember, he's going to be termed out. So if people are wondering about the governors, that's the way Virginia works.
Yeah,
so
it's one term.
One term and
yeah,
done.
Good old Thomas Jefferson rules. Susan Collins, we'll see. Let's just pretend we lose Maine and we lose Iowa in like a goofy thing. Okay, then we're down to 51. Cool. Right? Now, if you hold on to Maine and Iowa and you win Georgia, Virginia, you could get 55. I mean, like we're talking about, it's actually a pretty good map for us, given what we just did. Given we flipped Moreno and we flipped Casey, and they're waiting to call that. And if we flip Lake, we'll be in a much, much better spot there.
Well, and see, that's why Kerry Lake takes on significant, you know, even more importance. Obviously, we already have the majority, but that's one less number that we have to, you know, gain to retain power in the Senate in 2026. But Charlie, I'm telling you, there's going to be some weird math happening in 2026 if these current trends hold, which they in 2026, I think it's more predictable that they will. But look at this. You had these are percent increase in Trump voters in select New York counties from 2020 to 2024. Kings up 12.57%. Queens 21.59%. Queens, Nassau 14.24% increase. Suffolk 10.75. Manhattan up 10.83% for Trump. The Bronx up 22% in the Bronx. I mean, Westchester up 10. So all I'm getting to, he loses New Jersey by 4. You know, maybe it's a pipe dream, a fool's errand. I'm just saying, in 2026, I wonder if you ran a really strong candidate, you might be able to surprise somebody in a state like New Jersey. So
maybe
because
I mean,
of the
we almost won
vote,
that governor's race. Remember, that governor's race was super close totally. Back. And by the way, their governor races are in off election years. So you got to remember that.
Yeah. Well, And to your point, Charlie, we ran a no-namer in New Jersey, and he almost beat the incumbent.
Yep, Phil Murphy.
Like, yeah.
Email us, freedom@charliekirk.com, and subscribe to our podcast. Boy, the amount of emails we're getting is just is awesome. People that are just so excited. Guys, we won. We won the presidency. That really is, you know, they say there's three equal branches of government, and there is, of course, technically. But there's so much unrealized executive power, and they're going to cut this up. Oh, Charlie wants Trump to be a dictator. No, it's like, actually, the bureaucracy is there, and there's a lot of crap to clean up. And we have borders to secure, and we have to allow drilling to occur. And don't you agree, Blake, that there's unrealized federal power?
There's a lot of unrealized federal power. And, like, the truth is, you know what's even more authoritarian than anything Trump could do? Letting unelected bureaucrats do whatever they feel is best. You guys didn't get elected to crap. So, no, Trump is allowed to make appointments to fulfill the agenda he promised. That is not a dictatorship. That's less dictatorial than any prime minister in Canada or in Britain or in Europe. It's just total nonsense crap that they're feeding you.
Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. By the way, you know, I haven't seen a lot of, and I'm sure it's coming, I haven't seen a lot of the stories of, like, what went wrong in the final days of the Harris campaign, right?
There's some funny stuff. There's stuff like Obama was trying to coach her speech to, like, talk less about Trump. Talk more about your personal story, Kamala. Like, we're getting a little bit
of
that.
One of my favorite is the Politico article, 10 Democrat thinkers on what the party needs right now. How about this one? The Democrat Party should act more democratically.
Ooh, like hold a primary?
Yeah, a vision that meets Americans from across the political spectrum. Here's the one. Populism must ignite to rebuild the Democrat Party.
I want the really nasty articles about that 3-week period where they were forcing Biden out.
I know.
I want nasty tell-all memoirs on that one.
Your opponent has a national rage machine. Demographics are not destiny. These are actually pretty good. Speak to working class pain. Oh, you mean like listen to your voters? Praise God. We won, everybody. We won. Man, it's still not set in. Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. What an unbelievable start to 2024. We had last month saving babies with preborn by providing ultrasounds. And we're doing again this year what we did last year. We're going to stand for life because remaining silent in the face of the most radically pro-death administration is not an option. As Sir Edmund Burke said, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing, and we're not going to do nothing. Your gift to preborn will give a girl the truth about what's happening in her body so that she can make the right choice. $280 can save 10 babies. $28 a month can save a baby a month all year long. And a $15,000 gift will provide a complete ultrasound machine that will save thousands of babies for years and years to come. And will also save moms from a lifetime of pain and regret. Call 833-850-2229. That's 833-850-2229. Or click on the preborn banner at charliekirk.com. That is charliekirk.com and click on the preborn banner. Also save moms from a lifetime of pain and regret. I'm a donor to this organization. They're terrific. Go to charliekirk.com, click on the preborn banner. Sam Rodriguez, pastor of New Season Church, president of the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference. Pastor, welcome to the program. Thank you for making time.
Charlie, thank you for having me. And by the way, congrats, man. Congrats. We saw more young people support the conservative cause than ever before. Much to your leadership, no joke. I am extremely proud of you, and to God be the glory, but congrats.
Well, thank you. To God be the glory is right. So let me ask you, Hispanic men in particular supported President Trump, a constituency the Democrat Party always took for granted. What happened this election cycle?
54%. 54% of Latinos. 45% of all Latinos, biggest numbers, largest numbers in American history. And by the way, Charlie, I just received a press release regarding statements made by legacy media. Officially, Latinos are now part of the racist, misogynist list. I'm not kidding. They just deemed us, Latinos voted for Trump because we are racist and we are misogynist. We are machista. How about that? We're on the list, man. We're on the list. Congrats, we're there, man. We made it. Of course, we're not racist and misogynist. Let me tell you why we did. We supported President Trump and the conservative cause because it wasn't about we voted against Kamala Harris, to be honest. It could have been Joe Biden. It could have been Gavin Newsom. It could have been Josh Shapiro. How about that? We voted against DEI, CRT, wokeism, cancel culture, open borders, fentanyl, Bud Light, biological men and women sports. We voted against looting and rioting in San Francisco, California, and across America without any legal ramifications. We voted against drag queen reading hour to our kids. That's what we voted against. It wasn't against Kamala Harris. We voted against a Democratic Party, listen carefully, that is no longer liberal. It is socialist. It's no longer left of center. It is extreme cuckoo for Cocoa Puff. And that's why Latinos, 45% supported Trump, 54% of Latino men voted for President Trump.
It really is remarkable. Let's play here. Cut 226. This is the media basically calling you a racist. 226.
I just say really quickly, too, Democrats need to be mature and they need to be honest and they need to say, yes, there's misogyny. But it's not just misogyny from white men. Mm-hmm. It's misogyny from Hispanic men.
Right.
It's misogyny from black men. Things we've all been talking about who do not want a woman leading them. Might be race issues with Hispanics that don't want a black woman as president of the United States. You know, the Democratic Party, I've always found when you're sitting around talking, they love to just sort of balkanize everybody into these separate groups and say, oh, white people don't like women and black people. No, it is time for the Democrats to say, okay, and you and I have talked about this before, a lot of Hispanic voters have problems with black candidates.
Right. With other Hispanics. You've got some that don't like each other. And some of the most misogynist things I've heard going on this Get Out the Vote tour came from black men. I mean, misogynist things. So you're absolutely right. It's not simplistic. And we've got to have real honest conversations about it.
Real honest conversations.
Pastor, your reaction.
Joe Scarborough and Al Sharpton calling Latinos racist. Isn't that racist in itself? It is absolutely absurd. Let me just give you this, Charlie. Not only is that naive, it's cognitively naive. They're lacking the bandwidth. They're back in analog in a 5G world. Intellectually speaking, they just articulate the argument of a chestnut roasting on an open fire. It's Christmas season coming up, so that's applicable. Let me give it to you straight. The reason why Latinos voted for President Trump, we were conveying one message. Let me give it to you in one sentence. Get your hands off our children. That was it. We are a community of familia. We're very family oriented. We adore our kids. All these agendas coming from the left are coming after our children. If they don't kill our children in the womb of abortion, they kill our children in the classroom with social constructs and ideologies that are counterintuitive to the word and the will of God, even to our American Constitution, to the Bill of Rights. So with that being said, hey, Joe, that's racist. Al, what you stated was racist. And the reason we voted for Trump was conveying a message, get your hands off our children. Keep on with the name calling all you want. The more you name call, the more the Latino community will emerge as one of the strongest pillars in the conservative movement for generations to come. Get your hands off our kids, man.
Andrew, you have some thoughts here.
Yeah. Hey, Pastor Sam. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
It's been a while, my friend. You know, so they want to, Pastor, they want to give it all to this, the fact that it was the economy, right? They look at New Jersey, that it wasn't necessarily a values issue. What's your take on that? I mean, you know, where is the Hispanic community, you know, the Catholic Hispanics, the evangelical Hispanics, where are those numbers at like that? And are evangelicals still growing as a proportion?
Yeah, the evangelical community, even recent surveys just came out in the past few months on that. There's a book called Latinoland by Maria Aranha. There's a PBS special that came out. And the Latino evangelical community is the fastest growing religious demographic in America. It's not just growing, it's blowing up. And as you know, many of the mainstream Protestant denominations, but many of the evangelicals, the Baptist Assemblies of God, Church of God, Foursquare and all that, their major growth comes from Latinos. So it is growing. This community is blowing up, and there's no end in sight. Inevitably, there will be a tipping point with migratory trends changing and so forth, and that's going to happen somewhere mid-century, all things being equal. But right now, it is growing. That growth comes with family values. It's still a very conservative community. It is. It's one of the most pro-life communities. Some studies came out, you know, contradicting that right before the election by leftist institutions. Coincidentally enough, maybe the Des Moines Register. I'm sorry. I'm a part-time comedian. I had to bring that. The Des Moines Register. Boy, were they off. But, you know, so, you know, that leftist sort of machinery out there is producing data that doesn't line up with the outcome. And the outcome is Latinos. How many? Let me ask you one question. Find me one Latino you have ever met that believes in late-term abortion. In late-term abortion, you'll never find it. So, yes, conservative community emerging, blowing up, I believe will be a foundational pillar for the conservative movement in the 21st century. Matter of fact, I am certain of that.
Well, there was a great tweet. Charlie flagged it for me. It was like somebody on X said, try calling me Latinx again, huh? You know, I mean, they worded it a little more flowery than that, Pastor. So I won't bring it to you. But I think it's emblematic of what you're talking about,
Andrew, being one of my favorite people on the planet, by the way. And so, no joke, Andrew is.
But the
X part, how stupid is that from a branding standpoint? You want to cross out a community. It's just, again, from a branding perspective, who thinks of this? That's the pushback. I do believe that there is an opportunity now for the Republican Party, more importantly, the conservative movement, to affirm this engagement for generations to come. And it's going to deal around the issue of immigration. So there's a way of doing it in a way, and President Trump already did it. He already did. If you heard him carefully, he said this, which, by the way, it boggled the mind. This is what he said in his acceptance speech. Did you all hear it? He said, we want immigrants to come here. What in the world? How can the left? He said, we want immigrants to come here, but they have to come here legally. And they have to love America, et cetera, et cetera. There's a way of doing this where it's a win-win. We stop all illegal immigration, cut off the cartels, and do it in a way that respects the image of God in every single human being. But I'm telling you, we're about to see this Latino emergence in the forefront of a conservative Judeo-Christian value-based movement that will be transformative for America for generations to come.
It's remarkable to see. And the Democrat Party took the Latino-Hispanic community for granted. And it is continuing that this trend will only continue. And understand, it's less about race and more about class. Hispanics are in the working class. And the Democrat Party is not the party of the working class.
Do you realize that during Trump's first term, I want your audience to do their Google or ChatGPT due diligence, please. Make sure of this. Go fact check this. During Trump's first term, Latinos blew up as it pertains to home ownership. The unemployment rate was the lowest ever for Latinos. But home ownership, in a matter of fact, we exceeded for a great season there, even, I hate to say these terms, Caucasian white home ownership. That's college graduation rates blew up. So the Latino community is not just no longer low middle. It is middle, high, middle, going upper if you're using these old archaic terms of measuring class. It's an incredible time during the first term. Latinos remember that. We were doing better in every metric without exception during Donald Trump's first term. So now here comes Donald Trump 2.0. So yeah, the economy was critical, but I believe there were some implicit issues, some silent issues, like, you know, biological men and women's sports, like the transgender ideology infiltrating elementary schools, like the idea that a six-year-old who is confused about their gender can actually receive government intervention and take that child away from our homes. Latinos are saying, get your hands off our kids. So I do believe the future is bright with Latino conservatives and so forth. But I do believe we also have an opportunity to help frame the narrative against this notion from the Democrats where, hey, I think this is actually the best season for the Democratic Party. It really is. It's the quintessential wake-up call, if they get it. Joe Scarborough and Al Sharpton aside, if they wake up and go like, we're blowing it with the largest minority group in America, let's repent, mea culpa. What do we do to reach you guys? And to have a frank conversation, it could strengthen that party. If not, that party's going to go into the abyss of the political sphere out there for the next few years.
Okay, Sam Rodriguez, thank you so much. And please plug your stuff for our audience very quick.
SamPastorSam.com, brand new book, Fresh Oil, Holy Fire, New Wine. Pick it up on Amazon today. You guys are amazing. Again, congratulations. Let's go change the world.
God bless, man. Thank you. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. A large retail store just canceled the huge order, leaving MyPillow with a ton of extra pillows. But you know what? That's their loss in your game. For the first time ever, you can get a standard classic MyPillow for wholesale prices, only $14.88. But it gets better. For a limited time, they're offering their entire classic collection at wholesale prices. Get queen-size MyPillows for just $18.88. Upgrade to a king for only a dollar more. Get the body pillows for $29.88 and multi-use MyPillows for only $9.88. Go to MyPillow.com, use promo code KIRK, or call 800-875-0425 to take advantage of wholesale pricing for the first time ever. On top of that, receive free shipping on orders over $75. They've never been offered this low before. There are limited quantities at this price, so the limit is 10. Once they're gone, they are gone. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-875-0425. Use promo code KIRK to get the standard MyPillow for only $14.88, the lowest price ever. That is MyPillow.com, promo code KIRK. All right, Blake, navigate us through Mr. Kimmel here. It's too good to be true.
Oh, it's great. So we've been enjoying the victory, but we haven't actually taken a lot of time to fully enjoy
their misery,
the agony, suffering.
We haven't done that at all. It's a little bit slower than I think it's going to pick up, though.
It'll pick up.
It's going to pick up.
There's been a lot of this, so we want to have some of these good ones. So, and there was a bit of a delay too. Like in 2016, you had Stephen Colbert did that live stream with Mark Halpern on the show, where they come in and they thought he was going to have him to walk. Oh, it was so great. But what's the number here? So Jimmy Kimmel, of course, was a very aggravating lib. He's one of the biggest figures in the turning of late night TV into this endless crap show. He started to basically cry last night in his first program post-election. Let's play 290.
Let's be honest. It was a terrible night last night. It was a terrible night for women, for children, for the hundreds of thousands of hardworking immigrants who make this country go. For healthcare, for our climate, for science, for journalism, for justice, for free speech. It was a terrible night for poor people, for the middle class, for seniors who rely on Social Security, for our allies in Ukraine, for NATO, for the truth, and democracy and decency. And it was a terrible night for everyone who voted against him. And guess what? It was a bad night for everyone who voted for him, too. You just don't realize it yet.
I like that his voice started to crack when he got to NATO. For NATO.
I know. But it's just, I mean, he's supposed to be a comedian, right?
allegedly, he was. But
no.
By the way, democracy, who won the popular vote, exactly?
It's so symbolic, too, that one of the biggest trends in this campaign is this was like the dude bro election of like ordinary dude saying, wait, the Democrats are awful now. He used to do the man show. He used to do like a dude bro show and was a liberal. And the fact that
it was a misogynist show.
It was
let's be clear.
Yeah.
He did like actually gross things.
Yeah. He did like gross stuff. Whatever. That used to be a thing you could have on the left. You could be a dude bro leftist and you can't anymore. And they turned off so many people with all that scolding, with all that they just became so unpleasant that they can't have the coalition they used to have that won elections. We have another funny one we should play here. Let's play 205.
Quick question. So does anybody know how to find or hire a hitman or woman? Because we don't want to be sexist. So, but I think we could pull this off collectively. If you want to chip in, DM.
I mean, the secret time. By the way, our threats are going like crazy right now. We're getting tons of stuff. They want me dead. We need like 24-hour security. It's out of control. I mean, these people are deranged.
It's gross, but it's a badge of honor to be blamed for what we managed to pull off.
I mean, will the FBI come after her? I mean, why did TikTok even allow her to post it? We're not allowed to even say trans on TikTok without. By the way, we're gonna fix that. We got a lot of stuff to fix.
There's
by the
so
way.
Many things. I feel like. I really hope we can use this to create a big vibe shift. It'd be so amazing if we could have Jeff Bezos come out and say, yeah, we're just going to not censor things on Amazon anymore. This was a vote for free speech. YouTube come out and say, we're just going to be hands off. Just be hands off. We're not even saying you need to be a right-wing propaganda sphere. Just don't have the suffocating nanny state, like censorship machine, it would be good for America. It'd be good for the right. It'd be good for the left. Everyone would feel better if they didn't have to worry about someone coming in and banning them for something. Just let people talk.
Do we have more kind of videos like this? All right, let's play. By the way, this is my favorite. Just let's put 303 up on stage, on screen here. Democrats call for a party reckoning. Just look at this. How delicious is this here? Democrats call for a party reckoning. Let's play cut 304.
And finally, we talk a lot about these different demographics and these assumptions of where they're going to go. Latinos in Texas, a district that's 97% Latino, went 75 percentage points for Donald Trump. Why?
Misogyny.
The border crisis is on their doorstep.
So,
and they were begging people to care about it for years. We need to take
sexism,
some lessons.
That's what that was.
The lessons are not
knock, knock.
Sexism.
Who's there? Oh, my gosh. It's Whoopi.
We have just a few seconds left. Let's play 231.
I'm sorry.
No, we don't hate you, actually.
We'll be playing that one, like the chick screaming at inauguration.
Oh, no. We want you to live in a decent country, actually. And I just...
We will make your country great again, even if it's against your will.
I know. They need to have some humility. By the way, some people say, oh, Charlie, you shouldn't show these clips. Honestly, these people wanted us dead the last 4 years. I'm going to enjoy it for a couple days. It's only been 2 days, by the way. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.